Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
It's Nick and Neil's Summer Millwall History Show.
Welcome to Neil and Nick's Mill Summer History Shows, listeners. And Neil, we've got a real Millwall character. We've just finished recording, listeners, our Legends show. And Neil, I think, you know, if you're talking about a wider definition of legend, I think you've got to include our first name in this little series here, mate. Elijah Moore. Not a name that many will know, but I think he does have legendary status in our club's history.
Definitely. Definitely somebody who's been forgotten in the mist of time, because he died in, what, 1961, when he was the best part of 95 years old.
But
served Millwall from the very start of the club. Started off as a gateman, and was probably actually a fan before that.
Absolutely.
Is funnily enough, just before we started recording this bit, we started talking about non-league football.
And
the grassroots show. And you tend to find, if you go to a non-league club or enough, they will grab you to do something.
Well, it depends on voluntary labour, doesn't it? I mean,
they will grab you to do something.
Yeah.
I've done it. It's happened to me before when I was editing, or I wrote for a paper in Bognor. And ended up doing the Bognor programme.
Right, yeah.
And things like that. And non-league, they will grab you. And Elijah Moore was obviously a fan, lived on the East Ferry Road, grew up there.
Yeah.
And so went along and started to watch a local football team.
Which happened to be Millwall Rovers at the time,
back then. And obviously knew a few people and was grabbed, I presume, and or volunteered, whatever it was, and became a gateman.
He never escaped.
And there starts, I hate the word journey that they use now.
It's a good one.
But this started a long love affair with Millwall that lasted until
his lifetime,
World War II and probably beyond. I think I titled this More Than a Groundsman.
Well, I was just going to say, you mentioned that you're a journalist by trade, and I thought this is the notes that Neil sent me, listeners, betray the real professionalism. Elijah Moore, More Than a Groundsman. I think that's a great little double use of the word more and the play on it. And I think it also sums up the man's life, Neil, because he was a groundsman, but he was more than a groundsman. We've just been joking about the embodiment idea of a club, and I think Elijah did embody Millwall. He was in at the start and helped on a number of occasions to create it physically at North Greenwich and then at Carlblow Lane. But let's start with his early life, because you've mentioned he was East Ferry Road. So he's on the Isle of Dogs. He's born in 1866, born in Canning Town, but brought up in East Ferry Road, a highly, highly industrialised area back then, Neil. Dockside industry of a Victorian nature. Just looking at his early jobs here, working as a a van boy on the Great Western Railway at the age of 14, listeners, 14 years old, and he's working on the Great Western Railway now. Hard work, the physically tough men of that era that created our club.
Mate, you people like to class themselves as working class these days.
Mm.
But we're not, we're middle class. We can take this forever, yeah.
Very soft and luxurious lives we lead by the side of the
people were working class, and that area at the time was a working class area. Heavily industrialized.
Yeah.
Surrounded by docks. Great poverty.
Yeah.
This really, if you ever go around the Isle of Dogs now, you can quite easily be lured into a false sense of security. This place was a slum, wasn't it? And
slum's a good way to put it. Yeah, it was the arse end of London. No one cared about it. It was it's reason. The people that lived on the island, their function was to hard manual labour. I'm just looking at these notes here, Neil. I mean, 14 years old, listeners. He's working as a van boy on the railway, steam railway, Great Western. 1891. How old he had been then? He's in his 20s, 25. He's working as a hammerman, living in Athol Street in Poplar with his wife and two daughters, Agnes and two daughters, Emily and Agnes. He's assisting a blacksmith in forging iron and steel from bar, rod, plate or sheet iron. Hard, physical, hot, tough labour. I mean, you're right. We lead luxurious lives now by comparison. That's working class hard life. And many, many obviously lived short lives as a consequence, because it was a tough existence back then. So, you know, I think we have to remember that's the origins of football, professional football in our country, and particularly the origins of Millwall Football Club. These are the men that helped create it.
Tony joining the working class ballet, didn't they?
Working class ballet, and this goes for all clubs. I mean, it includes Stoke, Luton, the Manchester. All of them were born of this. I mean, it's quite strange, and we're going off topic a little bit, but you know, the modern world of big money and clubs flying international games, you know, this is where it comes from, but easily forgotten. Elijah Neil joined our club as a gateman in 1887. Millwall Football Club, Millwall Rovers, was only formed in late 1885, so just a year and a bit after its formation, he was working as a gateman. That would have been at the back of the Lord Nelson, I would think, where I think was the first ground that was enclosed, and where they probably would have charged to get in there. So he would have been working at the back of the Lord Nelson. And then 7 years on from then, so we're talking about, 1894, he's joined the staff as groundsman and reserve team trainer. So a step up the ladder for Elijah by the mid-1880s, 1890s. I love this little story about his wife serving teas for directors and officials.
That was something I stumbled across when I was looking at his life, that this just wasn't his life, but
his family's life. Yeah.
And
yeah,
everything the family did seems to revolve around Millwall. I know your wife probably groaned when you mentioned that podcast.
Only slightly. I'm going to Millwall again. Well, we all know that feeling, don't we? But no, I mean,
going to games and doing podcasts and things like that, they just don't understand. But old Eli, he had the right idea. He brought the missus down there.
Absolutely, absolutely. So he's groundsman at, this would be North Greenwich, and I suppose the Athletic Ground in due course. The Athletic Ground is, of course, the one that's now located where Asda is by Cross Harbour Station. There's no images of the Athletic Ground now. I've seen the kind of line drawings of it. It looked a fairly big, wide expanse of ground. So he would have known, you know, we'd had to have known his stuff to make a decent pitch there.
Yeah, let's face it, it would have been pretty rudimentary back then. There wouldn't have been
no roped areas off for the spectators. Yeah,
there wouldn't have been drainage and everything that that they're probably ripping the pitch up as we speak down the Den after this season's finishing.
Yeah, but that's, it's done to a different standard and level yeah. now, isn't it?
This would have just been clearing puddles, really, and reseeding in the summer.
Well, interestingly, none of the grounds, I mean, I think the Isle of Dogs, the ground that it sits on is London clay, and I think that drainage was always a problem, I think, especially...
Marshland, wasn't it?
And yeah, the ground that we would come onto at North Greenwich, which Elijah would help build, listeners, in 1901, which is a subject of one of our other shows in this series, so do tune in for the other shows when the club was forced... a very short notice to move locations from the athletic ground at Cross Harbour, as we'd call it now, to North Greenwich. Nowadays, we'd call it Millwall Park. Elijah, as in his role as groundsman, Neil, he's also, at the same time as being groundsman, he's also training the Millwall Athletic side and also running his Millwall St John's, which effectively was a reserve side, which was doing quite well. So he's proving himself as a... if not a manager in the modern terms, but as a coordinator of a football team in his own right, as well as being a groundsman. It's quite a range of roles, really, isn't it, when you look at it?
Well, it would have been a full-time employee. He was probably actually apart from... In fact, I doubt even the manager back then was full-time. It was an honorary position. So it had probably been one of the only full-time employees. So
he had scouting as well, I see. Scouting yeah. as well.
Yeah, but a lot of these players came through that we're going to talk about, the likes of Sammy Frost,
yeah.
Original yeah. Fred Bevan, who famously came from a family of 21. Can you believe
21?
21. You can tell they didn't have TV back then, can't you?
And he's gone on to have 11 of his own.
Yeah, 11 of his own. Christ almighty. And we have a go at Jordan these days, don't we? Dick Jones, the Welsh National, Jimmy yeah. Ryan, they all came yeah. through this great, great Millwall St John's side, which in 1898-99 scored 202 goals. Gary Rowett, are you listening? 202 goals, conceded 13, which I think probably a slight exaggeration. But
Rowett, his ears will prick up at the conceded 13 part. The 202 goals, that's unimaginable, Neil, isn't it?
Winning 28 games and winning the North Eastern League. So this would have been park football. Millwall would have been, Millwall at the time would have been in the Southern League.
Yep.
And so they needed a side to bring
reserve
through.
Reserve side.
Yeah. And a lot of these players, they came through the Glengall Board School. Yeah, if you like, he was really a modern day Bob Pearson.
Yeah. Funny enough, we mentioned recently online yeah. by a so-called famous Millwall fan. I love some of the names here. This Mill St John's side, our reserve side, listeners at the time, became champions, beating this fantastic football man club, London Small Arms. London Small Arms. I think that's a great name for a football club.
That would have been a factory. Yeah, that would have been a factory side.
Yeah. 8-0 we've won.
But and this team is attracting hundreds of people.
Yeah.
They played a London Junior Cup match against Great Western Railway Mechanics.
Another great name. That's a great name. What happened to these great name sides, listeners? We beat the Mechanics in Stratford. 10-1.
10-1. This team, they'd only been beaten twice in 2 years at home, and 400 people that turned up to watch essentially two park teams play. I know
you absolutely.
Look on YouTube now, and you have the likes of SE Dons that attract quite a few fans to Sunday morning football down in Lewisham.
It's becoming a thing, isn't it? But these were, I suppose it shows the hunger for football amongst working men. There was a break, it was an escapism, Neil, wasn't it, from the kind of life that we've described
this
earlier
was
on
the
in this
entertainment. Room. This was the, yeah. and they played the Middlesex Junior Cup tie at the Athletic Ground. They yep. beat Millwall Excelsior. God knows who they were. They beat them 4-0. But this was watched by 800 people.
I love this I love this football. They also beat Crouch End Vampires, a club that still exists, apparently. The Crouch End Vampires. I love that name. I want to find out more about them. Wadham Lodge, which still exists. That still exists as a football centre, Wadham Lodge. 9-3 win there.
Yeah, but they actually play in the Southern Amateur League. When I was researching this, I thought, hold on a minute, Crouch End Vampires, that's a club that's still in existence. Lo and behold, the Crouch End Vampires are still there. I wonder if they still talk about the day when they got beat by Millwall's reserve side, 9-3.
Managed by the great Elijah Moore. So Elijah is not only a groundsman at the Athletic Ground, listeners, he's also managing Millwall's reserve side to some success, as we're showing here. He's also lending a hand with the first team under the manager, or what we would call manager now, Bill Lindsay. And he became a trainer until Bob Hunter came in, another legendary figure in his own right. Yeah. But Neil, larger figures, legendary status, really, for me, really takes hold in 1901 when Mill Athletic Football Club nearly died. And he was given an immense challenge, wasn't he? We had to vacate the Athletic Ground because it was required by the dock company for storage works. And he was required to find another football ground and transform it into one capable of taking Southern League football inside 2 months, July 1901 to September 1901. It performed a small miracle.
This would have been backbreaking work, absolutely back, because there wasn't much of the modern machinery.
Muscle, horsepower. Yeah,
basically, this would have been muscle and horsepower, because you had to do everything by hand. I don't know if they had, I don't even think mechanical cranes were a thing, which I think would have, well, when we moved grounds, would have helped an awful lot. But this was,
no,
ground was actually a potato field. And he turned it into a football ground, and he was pretty instrumental in finding the location and preparing the ground.
Yeah,
I don't know if anybody knows Millwall Park, but it's kind of located where the railway arches are now, and then there was a rope works a little bit further, and there was a little ground that he transformed into this football pitch.
I've got a little quote from Lions of the South on the prospect that Elijah faced in 1901, Neil, which, if listeners will forgive me, I'm just going to read a couple of paragraphs. I won't overdo this, but I think it really sums up the prospect that this man faced. It says, poor Elijah must have felt that he needed powers only previously recorded in Genesis. That's not the rock group, listeners, that's the Bible. To get the pitch ready on time. One problem after another reared its ugly head. First, after the original grass was fired, massive ruts appeared, which needed a steamroller to remove. A major headache was water. A heavy clay subsoil prevented it from draining. Yet somewhat paradoxically, for 6 months, it had to be carried to the ground in tubs until it was laid on in an old shed, which masqueraded as changing rooms. An old terrace was found from Poplar Park, from Queen Victoria's Jubilee, and to put the finishing touches. And somehow, miraculously, after 2 months from being told to convert a farm field into a Southern League football ground, Elijah Moore and his small band of volunteers had done it. Not only did they have a pitch, but to the amazement of even their own supporters, Mill had a pretty handy side. It looked a bit rusty, but improved greatly as the season progressed. I think that's a fantastic little bit of prose there by James Murray, one of my favourite books. And it really does sum up the semi-miraculous feat that Elijah performed in turning that piece of scrub ground to a football ground, Neil. But for him, we wouldn't have a football club now, would we?
No, and there was a great quote from a newspaper of the time. It says, as a groundsman, Moore cannot be beaten. He looks after the ground like a mother tends her child.
That's lovely. I love that.
It just sums up what this guy was, and he had a lot of offers to go abroad and throughout his career, and he always stood by Millwall. He was a true sense of Millwall man.
It also featured heavily in the move to Coldblow Lane, which would follow in 1910. I mean, that's a story we're going to cover in a separate show, listeners. So do tune in for that one. But I'm just looking at the magazine at the time, dated October 29th, called Lottinger's Weekly. It's got famous. I think people have seen it online before. The first game at the Den, Coldblow Lane, the visit of Brighton and Hove Albion. And there's a series of pictures on there, Neil, including Mr. E. Moore, the Mill groundsman, number six, because he was instrumental in creating the pitch, which always had a very good reputation at Coldblow Lane. It's always known as a good pitch. And I think that, you know, it was clearly a pleasure for him to work with it there. But again, that was an act of creation from nothing. That was a market garden, I believe, prior to it being turned into a football ground. So there's two Mill grounds that Elijah Moore was instrumental in creating, helping to create. I think that's legendary status in my book.
Yeah, and funnily enough, we talk about the family connection with him and Agnes, but also his son, Bill, joined the ground staff in 1919 and was later head groundsman. And apparently his grandson, Ron Chenery, was a turnstile operator. At the old ground. So this is a club that is, or a family that is steeped in Millwall tradition. Just think
absolutely
of the everything this lot would have had. And he was granted a benefit match, which shows the esteem that he was held in, because back then a benefit match, or a testimonial, if you like, you don't get too many groundsmen or other club officials having testimonials these days, do you? And
no,
it was the first team versus old Millwall reserves, made up of players that we mentioned earlier on in this show. And it had a guest, one George Roby. We're not going to say too much about George Roby because he's going to feature in a show that we've got planned fairly soon.
Sir George Roby, famous musical star, big name, big show business name in his time. Yeah. Also sportsman, curiously, signed for Millwall, of course. So that was quite a plum. I mean, to get a testimony, you're right. I mean, that would be a big sum of money for Elijah. And even to be, all joking aside, I mean, I see on your notes here that the board, when he finally retired in 1946, he was granted a pension by the board of directors, which they wouldn't have done that lightly, would they?
When this was made, the board was made up. The secretary Beveridge had been there since the turn of the century.
Beginning, yeah.
Tom Thorne had been there since the beginning.
Yeah.
Another one, he died just before this, was George Saunders. He was around until his death in the early 30s. So these people, they've come a long way together. By then, we're a club in the Football League, and we were doing quite well under cheerful Charlie Hewitt.
With expectations to get promoted.
Exactly. And we're going to come on to shows about that as well. And I think actually his retirement was put off by World War II.
And then I think have a lot of things, including our club plans. But
he eventually retired in 46. But these were men that had known each other for a long time, and there would have been an upstairs downstairs situation. But it showed what a caring club and what when Millwall fans look after each other. I think if there's ever a Millwall fan in trouble, even now, or
you see that now, don't you? You see
everybody rallies around And the club pension was probably a damn sight more than the state pension back then.
Absolutely, yeah.
It just shows in the esteem that this guy was held and everything that he did for Millwall Football Club, and somebody who now is forgotten.
Hopefully these shows reverse some of that. We last year, earlier this year, we've organised to get a plaque put up towards Bob Hunt. And I think I might make one my next mission in life to get one put on the wall at the Den to Elijah Moore, because the headline on these notes capture it very, very well. He is more than a groundsman. He is one of the founding fathers of the football club, and he deserves to be remembered. Born in 1866 in Canning Town, he would pass away in 1961. in Deptford, aged, what would that be, 95? A grand old man and one of the founding fathers of Mill Football Club. So thank you for your contribution on this, Elijah Moore. Thank you for your contribution on this, Neil Fisler, because I think we've captured it very well, what a major figure he is in that club's history.
It's Nick and Neil's Summer Millwall History Show.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.